In nearly a year of war in Ukraine, NATO allies have tried to present a united front. There are big divisions, though, not only over which weapons to send to Ukraine, but also over how the conflict should end and what role, if any, Russia should play in a post-war Europe. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports from Brussels.
Throughout this war, the core message of NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has been unity. This is how he put it to NPR in an interview in Brussels.
It is in our security interest to support Ukraine. And if you look across the lines, there's strong continued support on both sides of the Atlantic.
But there are also sharp divisions of opinion on the way forward. For instance, Germany is routinely reluctant to send heavier weapons. Chancellor Olaf Scholz explained his thinking last month to Bloomberg News.
We support Ukraine as long as it is necessary with all the means we can use, but also always avoiding that this war is escalating to a war between Russia and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
NATO allies also have different attitudes towards Russia itself. Late last year, French President Emmanuel Macron said NATO would eventually have to address Russia's security concerns.
Ce sujet fera partie.
This topic will be one of the topics for peace, and therefore it must be prepared. What are we ready to do? How will we protect our allies and member states? By giving guarantees for its own security to Russia the day it returns to the table.
But for NATO allies in Eastern Europe, the notion of making security pledges to a nation that has relentlessly shelled Ukrainian cities is stomach-churning. And for them, it's also personal. They spent decades under Soviet domination. Linus Kojala runs the Eastern Europe Study Center. It's a Lithuanian think tank.
This kind of rhetoric coming from the Western leaders plays into the Kremlin's narrative, because I think Russia launched an invasion of Ukraine not because of NATO, not because of security threats to Russia.
Instead, because Putin wanted to stop Ukraine from drifting out of Russia's orbit and into the embrace of the West.
He clearly stated that there shouldn't be Ukraine as a state because it's simply a part of Russia. So it's not because of NATO, it's because of Russia being an imperialistic power in today's Europe.
Bruno Lettay, a senior fellow with the German Marshall Fund in Brussels, says NATO allies are also split on their ultimate goals after the war.
The Nordics, Central and Eastern Europe, want Ukraine to win the war. And those member states that are perhaps a bit more further away from Russia also want Ukraine to win the war, but are probably also interested in some sort of deal, some peace settlement too.
Kristi Raik, deputy director of Estonia's International Center for Defense and Security, says these different approaches are partly a function of distance and history.
Being situated next to Russia, we sense the threat, of course, very clearly. For countries that are geographically more remote, the threat is not existential.
Raik says great power privilege plays a part as well.
France and Germany are used to seeing Russia as one of the major powers in Europe and are used to thinking that in the end, European security matters are settled and decided among the big powers.
But NATO didn't follow that principle after the breakup of the Soviet Union. And some analysts say it failed to take Russia's historical anxieties into account. Zach Pakin is a researcher at the Center for European Policy Studies, a Brussels think tank.
If the United States had not spent the past 8 years, or in fact the past 14 years, openly declaring that Ukraine would become a member of NATO one day, and had the United States not spent the past several years openly talking about Ukraine as if it was a de facto ally already of the United States, I think we wouldn't be here right now.
Pagan says Russia has to be a part of any lasting peace.
One way or another, whether we like it or not, at some point, we will have to address the question of finding an adequate place for Russia in Europe that provides Russia's declared security concerns with a modicum of legitimacy. And if we don't do that, then we're going to be in trouble.
Given Russia's brutality in Ukraine, there is no appetite for a public conversation on this now. And some say, as long as Putin remains in power, there shouldn't be one. Roland Freudenstein heads the Brussels office of the think tank Globsec.
I think there will be very, very loud debates in both Germany and France and other West European countries between those who are saying, no, with Putin, we cannot make a deal anymore. And those who say that diplomacy is about talking to people we don't like. I have an impression that probably the people who say no peace with Putin will win the argument.
Managing this question of the future with Russia is the big challenge for this year, for next year.
Olga Oelker is a top analyst for the International Crisis Group in Brussels.
One vision is the way to make Europe more secure is to weaken Russia as much as possible and build yourself up so that even if they rebuild, they'll still be scared of you.
Oelker says the problem with that tack is Russia's already scared of NATO, and it has nuclear weapons. The other option, she says, is this.
You talk to them, and you figure out ways of limiting activities like exercises, weapons deployments, and so forth that make it harder to start a new war.
As Russia's invasion grinds into its second year, any such negotiations seem a long way off. But officials across Europe are already thinking about them and how to make sure that when this war in Ukraine finally ends, it's for good. Frank Langford, NPR News, Brussels.